All right, folks, good Friday morning, huh? It feels like we're living over in the UK, all this rain and overcast, but that's not going to keep us down here. We got two very exciting guests in the studio with me today, and that is Dana Dugan, Bill Weisong. And how are you guys doing this morning?
Good. Very well.
There you go. Good. All right. We've got them sharing a mic, so you know, they're doing a little arm wrestling over there. But Bill is running for District 3 County Commissioner, and Bill, when did you start living here in the Springs?
Justin, I moved here in 86. I came out with a company that actually there at 2424 Garden of the Gods. It was a very small location, and it was a telecommunications firm. And then just the economy kind of did its thing in the 90s.
Yeah.
And so the whole idea was doing a different type of a business. And I had the opportunity to do many different things, travel for many different jobs in telecommunications. But I just didn't want to leave Colorado Springs. So I'm here. I have been for 36, going on 37 years, and just enjoy it, which has really given me the passion for why I'm doing what I'm doing.
There you go. And so District 3, for the listeners who don't know, what area of town is that?
Well, it's basically I-25 from County Line North down to County Line South, and then west to the Teller County border.
Okay.
And of course, when you redistrict, there's all kinds of crazy little bump outs and carve outs. Mm-hmm. So there's part of Glen Eagle that is in District 3, part of Monument that's in District 3, and then part of downtown is in District 3. So you really kind of have to look at a map to look at what part of town or what district you're in, because it's not a real finite line.
Yeah, and you go on the county website, folks, if you're curious, hey, what district am I in? Because we do have some elections coming up. When is the election?
Well, the primary election is on June 25th, and then the general election on November 5th.
Okay. Who's holding that seat right now, District 3?
Stan Vanderwerth.
Okay.
And he is term limited.
Yeah.
And so I've chatted with him, and I just feel that I can, with my length of time in the Springs, and all the public activities that I've been doing, that I have a great background to be able to step right in and be a very active participant in the county affairs.
Yeah, Stan's done a good job. Been there, I think, 8 years. Now he's running for Senate, state Senate.
Yes.
You know? So we should get him on the show. there you go. And so we have Dana here, too. Dana, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh yeah. We've been here for 19 years. Raised our daughters here. We were in Dallas before, and wanted something that was more nature oriented. Thought it would be Dallas is very material, and we were right
and humid.
It is. That's true. And my background professionally is in media. I worked at Nielsen for about a decade as a television executive and Lifetime Television, and done a lot of startups along the way. So, but we just love it. It's such a beautiful place. It's growing a little bit more than I would like, or that I think is probably wise.
Yeah.
We'll probably hit on that point, but that's enough about me.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's something, you know, as a growing city, I've grown up here, born here, and it is growing quite a bit. And you kind of question sometimes, hey, is the infrastructure all there? Are we, you know, just busting at the seams, continuing to build sea of homes, you know, or do we have actual infrastructure? And are we thinking 10, 20 years ahead instead of trying to just play catch up?
Yep, absolutely.
You know? I think that's the ticket.
Especially when it comes to our road network. That's that's really where my biggest concern. Look, I come from a developer family. My family owned a commercial mortgage bank, and they were developers. So this is a world, you know, at the family dinner table. I got, you know, a crash course in that whole industry. And I am a MBA graduate. I'm very pro-business, pro-capitalism. But
that's good.
Yeah.
That goes well in this
I thought
studio
so.
We got going
I thought
here.
So. Yeah. But I do think there are lines you don't cross, particularly as it comes to the infrastructure issue in wildfire, dire fire conditions, which is how West Side Watch, how Bill and I actually came to know each other, was formed. So,
yeah, because that's just been in the news the last couple of days, right?
It has, with Arrows West Apartments.
Yeah.
But it's been in the news for, since really for a while now. We've been working.
Probably a year or two, right?
Well, 2019 was the first, when the Broadmoor expanded the convention center. I live in the Broadmoor area. Okay. And so many of us were just really curious, not in a, in more of a, okay, what is this going to do if there is a problem? So we went truthfully in search of answers. And that's how we came across Fleet, the evacuation modeling software that we've been trying to get our leadership to use since then. And what it showed us was, yeah, that's a choke point, and that's a real problem in a dire fire, and that we should be looking at the evacuation times and what these developments do, particularly because we're bounded by the mountains on the west, so we can only go west-east, you know, to get out. And that in our area where your station is, there's really only three primary egresses. So that road network infrastructure has to, you do that first. You know, go ahead, build away. I don't have a problem with that. I lived on University Boulevard in Dallas. But let's make sure that people can get out in a dire fire, because the cutting down the trees, all that stuff is great, but it's not going to solve the homes or the fuels in those high wind fires. Yeah. And it's really just about getting out. Can you get out?
Yeah, some people say, hey, it's not if, it's when.
You yeah, know? That's right.
Unfortunately, we get in a dry climate here. We get high winds, and, you know, we've had our fires in the past and lost homes in you know, a couple different communities here.
You're correct. Exactly. Yep. So,
all right, folks, we're going to get a quick commercial break in here. You're listening to The Extra on Carter News Radio. We'll be back after these messages. All right, folks, we're back into it here. I was getting a lot of schooling here from Bill and Dana on what's going on. I said, hey, I'm not going to fake it. I'm not as up to speed on all the bills going on up at the Capitol, more tuned in with the housing side of things and property management and stuff like that. So they were getting me up to speed. They're going to help get you up to speed on the second segment. So make sure you stick around, you know, for the second segment, because you're going to learn about all these things going on at the Capitol that affect you. You know, and stuff that's not making the news headlines. So, Bill, we were talking over the break. You said one of the reasons you decided to run is because of what's going on, some of the things you've noticed with West Side Watch, right?
West Side Watch, yes.
Yeah, there you go. So let's expand on that a little bit.
Sure. One of the things that this is very personal, having gone through the Waldo Canyon fire. We live in the Mountain Shadows area. I'm president of the Mountain Shadows Community Association. And we experienced the fire firsthand. We were very fortunate. We didn't lose our house, but we had a lot of landscape damage and smoke damage in the house. But our neighbors across the street lost their house. And so it gives you a completely different perspective on what all this unfettered development can do, which then after the fire and then all of a sudden some development started coming in saying we want to put in 540 apartments right at a critical choke point of 30th and Garden of Gods. So that's,
yeah, it's funny how quickly people forget, huh?
They do. And so when we realized what was happening, evacuation, that was a major, major interchange or intersection that was choked. And so when we started realizing what was happening, the Mountain Shadows Community Association started recruiting some people. That's how I met Dana, because she had gone through some of that process. And we just continued to push forward. And we had multiple meetings with the Planning Commission. And then we appeared in front of City Council. And first time we lost, second time we finally were successful in defeating that particular application.
So why is it back now?
Well, this is a different intersection or a different corner. So we are now looking at the property that Widener Apartments wants to put 222 units on, and it basically is between Red Leg and the Loaf and Jug,
mm-hmm.
and they'll basically surround the gas station, Loaf and Jug. That it's the same intersection. So when we talk about infrastructure, they haven't expanded any of the roads. And you look at Fillmore and then the little bit further south on Centennial, they've got 2, 3, maybe I think the final number is going to be close to 4,000 apartments that are going in at that intersection, and it backs up. And the biggest issue we have is they look at a intersection or they look at a specific entrance and exit for a property. They don't look at the big picture. And this is what we've been fighting for years now, that the city needs to look at the big picture, look at evacuation planning, which then will tell people. Because when you put people close to those exit points, what about all the people that are further west? And as Dana said earlier, the only direction you can go is east. And that all of the numbers pan out based on what happened when we evacuated on June 26th in 2012.
So can I help you?
Yeah.
There's a science, actually, of evacuation modeling. It's been around since the 1970s. And to give you a sense of the program that we're trying to get them to use, it's free.
The problem, though, because government doesn't like free.
You're right.
So you charge for it. You charge for it. They'll
do it. Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Dang. And the guys who run it out of Old Dominion University have said they would train everybody for free. So it's mind-boggling. Let me tell you, it came out of Hopkins Applied Physics Lab. It's used by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to check all of the federally mandated annual evacuation plans and models for the nuclear facilities. MIT uses it. The Army Corps of Engineers uses it. DHS uses it. It is mind-boggling that there's so much pushback. We did meet with a couple of the developers in town. That's where the pushback's coming from, because just like they didn't like the geohazard ordinances, they're opposed to any possible impediment. But the truth of the matter is, it just makes it better building, right? I mean, not just the times are bad right now. So in Bill's area, when we were running the models in that Mountain Shadows area, it's 8 hours and 10 minutes in blue sky conditions, meaning no roads are blocked, no trees down, no cars stalling. Around here, we're at 8:30. And this was when we did the models 2 years ago. It's probably worse today because of all the growth. There's no excuse for not using the science. Marin County in California, and I know some people dislike California, but they're because of Paradise, these guys saw what happened. They're doing all of this cutting edge evacuation. They use evacuation modeling. They put maps out. Imagine, in the summer, 3 to 1 visitors to tourists in this town, right? The visitors don't know our roads. We don't publish any road maps that show the safe areas. So when it does get completely clogged, okay, where do I go where I'm going to have the best shot at survival? This shouldn't be pushed back on. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I do think that's a key point, is that this science is proven. And when we ran the model blind on Mountain Shadows, it nailed it, the time. Meaning we went back to Waldo, I'm sorry. Nailed the time. Nailed it. Blind. Like we didn't know, I didn't know the time when we were running it.
Yeah. What boggles my mind is the fact that they still want to build more apartments.
Yeah.
Because rents have gone down 2 months consecutively.
Yep.
They're vacancies. And I just don't know. Also, when you look at these prices that they're trying to get, a $2,500 for a 2-bedroom, kind of scratch your head and go, not sure. Our average wage is like $68,000 for a young professional in Colorado Springs. You kind of go, huh, what are we targeting here? And then also, you hear so much about affordability, and you also go, well, this isn't affordable housing. Same thing when they build a ton of homes at $600,000 and they go, we need more homes.
Yep.
Well, that's a $5,800 payment on a $600,000 house out east. So I think the pitch of affordability isn't real.
Yeah, you're right, actually. You know? And the numbers are also not real. So that's a whole other issue that we're going to do a white paper.
If there was a shortage, though, and it was like, hey, we need this land, otherwise we're going to continue having homeless people, it's like maybe you're like, all right, let's take the risk, right? But that's not the case.
11% vacancy rate citywide, 14% downtown is what we're hearing.
It's overbuilt. There's no question about it, and they're continuing to build. If you talk to people at Regional Building, they'll say a lot of these plans have been scrubbed, you know, by developers backing off and saying, "Ah, we're not sure we want to move forward if we don't have a shovel in the ground." So
20,000 more units by the end of 2025.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Bill, tell us what you think about that. Can you give us something positive?
Yeah, sorry.
Well, I'm going to back up for just a second. And Dana had mentioned Paradise. That was the campfire in Paradise, California, where 86 people perished. And what really gives the credibility to doing evacuation modeling, that if they had done that, what was the major impediment for those people getting out of the fire danger zone? 9 miles away in Chico, California, was a stoplight. And that backup there at that stoplight is what caused all the traffic to back up for over 9 miles into Paradise, and people literally died in their cars. So if you want a real refresher, let's go back to August of last year in the Maui fire in Lahaina you saw people had died in their cars. So we even have a fire marshal that says no one dies in their cars. Well, guess what? You look at not in Colorado anyway, but in the Paradise, California, and then Lahaina, Maui. They died.
Well, car or not, burning to death in my home or my car does not sound like a good option either way.
Yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying. You got to be forward thinking. You have to be on offense, and it goes back to the infrastructure, you know, and we just haven't been great at that, of being thinking 20, 30 years down the road. It's kind of like you can look at the I-25 project how long that took to get done.
Mm-hmm. Have you been, I don't know where you live, but Highway 24?
Yeah.
Is normal traffic, bumper to bumper. They want to add 24,000 cars a day on that road from Gold Hill Mesa, all of that development they're mm-hmm. wanting to do, and 10,000 on 21st daily.
It has a huge impact. And when we talk about planning, that seems to be an oxymoron. You can look 20 years, 30, 40 years out. The whole idea is that, okay, you can do that and it's expected, but if you start making changes and increase the density and you don't revisit the whole area for planning, then that's where the problems come in. And that's exactly what is happening on the west side. It's a desirable place to live, mm-hmm. and you've got some vacant land. And, well, instead of putting single-family homes or townhomes, patio homes, you've got a lot of those people that are wanting to retire and downsize, which again frees up a whole set of homes, because everyone will start moving back up as their family grows, that you want to be able to understand what that's going to do to the infrastructure, from roads, utilities, you name it. And COVID actually, you know, had a huge impact on people staying at home and not as much brick and mortar, but we're seeing a shift back.
Yeah.
People like to go to the store and look at it. Now, it's not going to be what it was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea is that we've got to plan far enough ahead for doing the infrastructure. And then if you start making changes, then you've got to understand what the implications are. A perfect example is this is out in Flying Horse North. The county put together a very extensive master plan. And the ink was barely dry before one of the developers said, I want to build a hotel. Yeah. Well, that was not part of a just completed master plan. And the county commissioners decided, okay, it wasn't unanimous, but it was enough to override those that didn't want it. And now you're putting in a hotel where it wasn't planned for. And now, what about the roads for that? versus, you know, the other. And that's our biggest issue.
No, I get it. I get it completely. We're going to hear from ABC News. They're going to chime in, then we're going to be back. Folks, we're going to talk about stuff going on up at the Capitol, stuff that affects you right in your backyard. You're listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Okay, we're back into it. If you're not uplifted yet, if we haven't brightened your mood, we're going to do it now. But we are talking about some serious things. Dana was bringing up, she said, hey, you know, what happens if one of your loved ones gets caught and trying to evacuate an area like the Broadmoor? And it's like, you know, like Bill was saying, until you live through it, right? And you're in that circumstance, it's like, that's why your passion is higher for this than it is for someone like me. I haven't lived through it, and it becomes very real. But I do agree with the fact that looking at our town overall, and not saying we don't have great leadership, we're blessed in this town with a lot of our leadership. You know, I look at the decisions made here, and then you look at the people up the Capitol making decisions, you go, whoo. Okay, you know, we're doing awesome, you know, but there is still this thing of, hey, we have 1.2 million people here by 2050. This is critical times, and we're expanding. It's fun. There's cranes downtown. There's apartments being built. There's new stuff. I mean, I never saw a crane growing up here in the Springs, but also it's like, are you doing it properly, right? Is it proper growth? Are we thinking ahead? And that's why I think it's valuable what you guys are talking about, because we're in a pivotal time for our county and for our city and how we expand.
Very much so. And that's the whole idea behind planning. It just seems as though a number of people are looking at it, and it's almost an oxymoron what real planning and real strategic planning is versus what is happening today, which is what is causing a lot of the problems in this uncontrolled growth, where you don't have a good plan that allows you to make certain you do have the infrastructure and the evacuation in the right types of homes. And they keep talking about, we need more homes. I draw a big distinction between an apartment and a home. Mm-hmm. And I am very pro-home. I am not pro-apartment, especially when it impacts critical infrastructure or evacuation areas.
Yeah, it's just more high density.
Yes.
You know, I think the patio homes they put up on right over in the area you're talking about, I forget who built those, was it Vantage, the patio homes there on the west side, the new construction. I'm drawing a blank on that road.
Where?
Now. Help me out. As you go up to the
Cheyenne?
When you go up to the Verizon, where the where Verizon is there, right? It dead ends in right there by the Beer Works, FH Beer Works, right?
Yeah,
and then you go right there and you drive down the road.
Yes.
Oh. Right?
Some of those are two-story townhomes, but they're purchasable.
Yeah.
And there's some patio homes that they built along the left side, which is like great because we do have an aging community. So I'm like, well, that's a good development there. That's awesome. They're, you know, main level living patio homes.
Have you driven Mesa recently, Avenue, and looked down into that little valley that, by the way, was a landfill?
I haven't.
You should go check that out.
Yeah, south of Fillmore, between the new Centennial and on to Fontmore. You've got a retirement center there, but across from King Supers.
Yeah.
They put in, I don't know.
Oh, like local is the one who's built the townhouses over there, local.
Yeah.
Townhomes, yeah.
But it's now all the development south of Fillmore is just
a sea of apartments.
Yeah.
Yeah, and gas stations.
Don't forget Starbucks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, what you think the solution is, really. I mean, you talk about more homes instead of apartments, and you know, what's the proper growth look like?
Well, I'm going to hop in here. I would start with using good demographic data. So I don't know if you're aware, but the state demographer issued in February updated numbers, and that's census data, so it lags a little. So that was the 2021 to 2022 mm-hmm. census data. That showed El Paso County had a record low growth of 3,350 countywide. The projections are just, I think, off. And I do have some background in that. And so we're going to try to do a white paper on that issue. So
you think they're saying we're going to have We're overestimating.
Correct.
Is what you're saying. Yeah. We're over-optimistic.
And here's why. There's two demographic trends happening right now. One is the baby boomers are reaching mortality age. My parents, for example. That's a long-tail demographic trend, meaning it covers a long period of time. And then at the same time, you've got your fertility rate plummeting.
Yeah, I know that.
It's at 1.48. You need it at 2.1 for just replacement. Just replacement. So when I was doing this math on the back of a napkin, you know, to hit a million by 2050, which is, I think, what the projection is for EPC, that's like two, if you factor in the fertility rate, right, just looking at that, not looking at the baby boomers' mortality, it's 2.4% growth a year. Consistent. And I don't think we've had that since the pioneer days, probably. So I just think that's the big...
So what do you, I mean, because I have this conversation all the time. You have all these apartments being built. There's some smart people. I always tell people, well, they probably have people doing projections and their stats that are much more educated than I am because they're throwing, you know, 30, 40, 50 million at some of these apartment complexes. Are they just totally missing it? Or some people say, you know, they know stuff you don't know.
Yeah.
That's going to happen in the springs here, whether it be government contractors and stuff like that, because it is kind of crazy. You think, well, how are the, you know, these, and even the hotels, right? We had like, what, a year ago, 8 new hotels come in. You're going, Marriott's got to do projections like 50 years out. And so, and I'm not arguing information, but it's just in my head, I just get like, why are they continuing to build apartments?
We have cyclical busts repeatedly, incredibly. My uncle owned the largest commercial mortgage bank in the state of California up in Hawaii, up and down the whole state. And this happened in the 80s. It happened again that bled into the 90s, frankly, because there was so much overbuilding and overloaning, I guess you want to call it that. And then we just recently had the credit default swaps.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge financial incentive. They make money, they being developers, on the build. And so in the, especially when you throw in affordable housing and now middle income housing credits, we're now, you know, MIHA is what they call it up in Denver. We're going to fund we're going to fund middle income housing basically, which is a totally foreign concept, something that we've never, you know, really done before. But when the taxpayer is funding it for the most part, and the developer gets to write in their line item on the pro forma statement, that's a lot of incentive to build irrespective of what market conditions may be.
Well, how is it affordable if it's going to be?
Well, that's another good question.
Going to be $1,900 for a one bedroom. How does that qualify for affordable housing?
Well, that's a great point. And I don't have.
But any. They're still getting the tax credits for it?
Well, and I can tell you of one development. I'm going to be careful here where, and there is a 106 that's filed on this. There were 7 units that were quote unquote 30% AMI, which is that affordable, and the rest were a market or above market rate. Now those numbers have come down, by the way. I mean, I'm seeing around 1350 or something citywide as market, but whatever that may be.
You're right. What they're projecting for the ones that haven't opened up their doors yet.
Right. Oh, okay. I didn't catch
I heard,
that.
Yeah, I think much higher is what they're
projecting
for the new ones coming on.
So they qualified, and I'm not an expert in HUD financing or PAB bonds by any stretch of the imagination, but I know that in looking at that analysis, because it came up in the hearing, that there were only, I think it was only 7 units in the entire 240 or something like
that. And that qualifies it?
Somehow.
Good to know. I'm learning a lot this morning. What do you think, Bill?
Well, and that is why we keep raising the question. We can't necessarily argue specifically on, you know, the financing, because some of that is going to be their own issues that they're dealing with. But what we don't want Colorado Springs to turn into is a slum.
Yeah.
And when you've got massive amount of apartment buildings that if they're not going to be rented and getting their income, the maintenance is going to go down. And as I was mentioning earlier, off air, that I do inspections of low income housing. That's my job. And it's incredible to see how some people live and how they treat someone else's property. And guess what? The government, that's us, that's the taxpayers, are continuing to pay for this, and they trash apartments.
Yeah, there's complexes. No accountability.
That is correct. And accountability, responsibility are absolutely huge, and we seem to be missing that. And we have a perfect example of that. On Tuesday, we were at the Planning Commission. We were discussing the whole issue around the Widener 222 apartments to be built. And Dana will go into a little bit more of it, but the rules keep changing. And as a opponent, we are very limited on how we can present our opposition. And you've got the city, and then you've got the applicant, and then the opposition. We get 3 minutes each.
Yeah.
And,
you know, that's out. I'm sorry. Bill is getting, this is my opinion, not Bill's. All right. That is fascism in my view. I mean, that is absolutely outrageous. The own manual that we asked for said equal time. And that's what it's been historically too. And there's just, it's unconscionable that our leadership would allow that. Just absolutely wrong.
Well, money talks.
Yeah. But if it were you, wouldn't you want the ability to provide a cogent response, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you, but I also have seen a little bit of the inner workings, so it doesn't surprise me. You know,
I'll say that.
So, I mean, it's like you said, I mean, there's accountability on all ends, and a lot of it is, you see developments and what's supposed to be done, and there's developments that I can use in examples in this town that have promised things, and things are supposed to be set aside for this amount of parkland and even schools and commercial, you know, development and stuff like that, and it's never happened, and it's, I think we, in a sense, we let the developers get away with a little too much.
Yeah.
You know, I go to areas like Arizona, and you got beautiful retaining walls, stucco, you know, back into a highway, right? Or high-speed road where you're getting 40, 50 miles per hour, yet you go down areas of a Mark Shuffle and it's a cheap wood fence, and you go, how's that allowed? Why isn't the builder required to put in a nice stucco retaining wall, right? So there's things like that that you notice, and you just kind of shake your head and go, okay.
Well, you know? I mean, that is a very interesting observation, because look at when they widened I-25, you know, 20 years ago or 25 years ago. And in order to do that, then the taxpayer built that big sound wall on both sides of I-25.
Yeah.
So in this case, that all they have to do, the developer is put in a cheap wooden fence. And then when Mark Shuffle gets built out and the neighbors complain, then guess who pays for it? It will be the taxpayers again that are going to be paying for this large sound wall when it should have been taken care of at the very beginning by the developers.
Yeah, good point. We're going to get a quick commercial break in. We'll be right back. You're listening to Extra on Caridoo News Radio. It just gets confusing. All right, we're back. You heard me say it just gets confusing there. We're talking demographics in the Springs. A lot of fun stuff. So we got a couple minutes left here, really. We cruised through that last break there. So, Bill, tell us you know, how people can get more information about your campaign, website, information, stuff like that, and how things are going right now.
Well, thank you, Justin. My website is www.billysong.com. And keep in mind that there is another Bill Weisong in town, that he's in the mental health area. So that's not me. But as far as getting into the race, it's because of all the 3.5 years, community involvement. And when you get kind of pulled into something like the 2424, that, you know, we don't have big bucks. And so it became really a grassroots effort to fight for what we feel are our community's rights. And that started it. Never thought I'd be there. Never thought I would ever be presenting in front of the Planning Commission, let alone City Council, multiple times. Mm-hmm. And then when we realized that, you know, we had issues coming in with, you know, additional development, and then we may just kind of close in on a couple of points about what's happening up in the state, that was kind of the final straw that kind of broke the back of not getting involved because of House Bill 24-1107, where it's in the Senate, it's gone through the Judiciary Committee, but it is going to violate our taxpayers' First Amendment, the Constitution, our rights to petition the government for redress. And what that means is that if we want to sue the city or the county or even the state, that in its land use, residential type issues, if we lose that appeal, we now have to pay for the expense that the city incurred, which all of a sudden, instead of them being very, cost conscious, they could double what the cost is because they could go out instead of paying $250 an hour attorney, you know, in-house, they might go hire someone at $600.
Yeah.
And then we would be
and we
the
pay
people.
For them already. We pay our taxes fund city attorney and county attorneys.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. 100%. So we got, 30 seconds left here. Bill, one more time.
Again,
people go to your website. How do they get involved? How do they help you with your campaign?
Please, again, the website, www.billweisong.com. I've got my phone number on there. We got email, which is Bill, the number 4, County Commissioner D3 at gmail.com. Send me an email.
And I want to just plug West Side Watch. Westsidewatch.org and Integrity Matters are two. If you want to, you know, we cover a lot. Those are two of the nonprofits. So I run both of those. And so if people want to learn more about these issues, sign up for our newsletters and go visit those sites.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Dana. Appreciate your time and knowledge, giving me some schoolage today. Bill, best of luck in the campaign. Thanks for taking the time to come on as well.
You bet. Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it.
All right, thank folks, you. That's it for The Extra. You got Tom Martino joining you next.